This is the Creative Sports Podcast. My name is Justin Peterson, and joining me are Garrett Wright.
I'm not sure most cameramen own slacks.
And Brock Rom.
That is my dream. I just want to be a lunch replacement master's director.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to plan and prep for all these events, games, and tournaments? Well, we have ESPN Senior Production Manager Becca Preston here to talk about just that. The logistics and making things happen on a large scale at ESPN.
I'm rolling on my audio.
I think you and I can just clap on, let's go 55 here. Okay.
Good old audio sync. The joys of production. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. My name is Garrett Wright. I want to start out with a big thank you to APM Music for donating the tracks we use on this podcast. Also, a reminder that this podcast is an extension of the sports creative community on Slack. So if you're hearing this and not a member of that community yet, you should head over to sportscreativeslack.com and sign up for free. Today, we have Becca Preston with us. We're very excited to have her join. She is a production coordinator at ESPN. Is that the correct title?
It used to be, yeah, senior production manager.
Senior production manager. See, I'm not giving her enough credit. That's the problem. I've known her for so long. She's probably had so many titles that I gotta stay updated.
The same thing, though.
Yeah, well, good. That's good, because if I didn't know, like, what your actual job was, I'd probably be in trouble trying to get through this. But let's just kind of jump in with what that title means, kind of what you do in your job, what your role is at ESPN.
Well, I guess the best way to explain what I do is to compare me to an air traffic controller. I make sure everybody's where they're supposed to be, when they're supposed to be there, with all the tools they need to do their jobs. So I work closely with the talent, making sure that they make it to set on time and they have their makeup and whatever else they need to get the job done. I work with the producers and the directors and the entire staff setting up hotel accommodations, office space, catering, pretty much the logistics of everything.
When you were first getting started in the industry, kind of what were some of the steps that you took to get to where you're at now? And you know, how did you end up at ESPN and in this role?
Have to take you way back to so you could fully understand the scope, I think, because it started in high school. I mean, I was an athlete, and then looking at schools, I was always really big into sports. I was a big field hockey player, and I went to school to play field hockey, and I don't know, I guess I thought I was going to be a field hockey player. That was what I was going to do for my career. Like, never really thought about school and what I was actually going for. And so the college that I went to, they were like, oh, what do you want to be? And I was like, what do you got? I'm going to be a field hockey player. And they're like, well, we have teaching. I was like, oh, great. I'll be a teacher then. That's perfect. And then, like, fast forward a little bit, field hockey was great. I started. All the seniors hated me because I was a freshman starting. It was awesome. And then I had somebody close to me pass away at home, and I, like, just wanted to go home. And so I left school and went to another college closer to home, and it happened to be a 2-year school, and I had no idea what I wanted to do with my life. So I ended up taking everything you can think of, sociology, thought I maybe wanted to be like a social worker. And then I took a TV production class and absolutely fell in love with it. And then decided I wanted to be the next Liz Bishop, who is a news anchor in my hometown. And so I started gearing towards that, and then graduated from the two-year school and went to Plattsburgh State, where I finished my bachelor's, and quickly realized that being on air was not what I wanted to do, or I kind of wanted to do it, but it really wasn't like what I was meant to do, because when you'd be practicing telling the stories, I'd have a huge smile on my face and I'd be talking about a fire that just happened and three people died and I'd be smiling. And I'm like, okay, this clearly isn't something that I should be doing. And it just so happened that TNT came to Plattsburgh looking for kids to work the Goodwill Games that were in Lake Placid. And since I was a good student, I got offered to work this event. And while I was there working the event, I met people who worked for ESPN freelancing and got connected with them. And they got me on, well, they didn't get me on. They gave me the contact to reach out to work the Great Outdoor Games in Lake Placid as well. And I remember calling, her name was Sandy Dunn. She was the production manager of the Great Outdoor Games. And she worked for a company called Lingner Group, because that was a package thing that ESPN aired. And calling her and telling her, like, I really want to work the Great Outdoor Games. And she's like, well, what can you do? I was like, well, I can type. I can do whatever you want. Like, I'll do anything. She's like, well, I've already hired everybody. But I need somebody to come and watch my kid. And I was like, I'll do it. Like, whatever you need me to do, I'll come and watch your kid. Like, that's fine.
Wow.
And then it ended up, the event came and I got there. She ended up not bringing her son. And I got to shadow her the entire event. And I made an impression on her because Plattsburgh was close enough. It was like an hour and a half away, where I was going to drive home every night after work and then come back the next day. But the first day we were together, and this is like something you can learn from anybody listening, she lost a bracelet that her son had given her, and it was like one of those mother's bracelets. And we had been all over scouting all of the different locations where the events were going to happen. And after work, I went back to every single spot that we were and did the whole, dear St. Anthony, come around, something's lost, it must be found, and found her bracelet in the middle of a grass field and brought it back to her.
Wow.
And at that point, she was like, so what do you want to do? And I was like, I want to work on the X Games. And she introduced me to Jed Drake, who was then the vice president of event production, and told him that I wanted to work on the X Games. And then he connected me to Christy Dockman, who was the production coordinator at the time. And like literally an hour later, I was hired to work at the X Games as a runner. And that kind of started my career, I guess.
I think you highlighted like some really key aspects there that a lot of people who are successful in this industry have, which is, and the biggest one to me that stands out is just the willingness to do anything, to get your foot in the door. And that really seems to be the way to go at ESPN. You hear about so many people's stories at ESPN of, I started here as a runner. You just said you started as a babysitter, right? But it got you your foot, you know, technically, even though she didn't bring her kid, but it got you your foot in the door, and you went and did that job to the best of your ability, and it gave you an opportunity. And I think that's something a lot of younger people can take from your story right there, is just like, be willing to do anything, because, and if you do it well enough, people notice it. People really do take notice of that.
Yeah. I mean, I have a funny, Chris Berman, one of the first, it wasn't the first X Games I worked, because the first X Games was a winter. So I think it was my second X Games. It was summer 2001. I think we were in Philly. It could have been 2000. I'm not sure. I think it was 2001. And he had brought his kids to the event, and my job was to take his kids on a VIP, like, behind the scenes tour. And still to this day, when I see Chris Berman, he's like, my son loved that day. But yeah, I mean, you never know what you're gonna end up doing when you're a runner.
Being a runner is a collection of odd jobs, and you can be at, like, I've done, you know, running a number of times. Becca has hired me a number of times, and you know, there are times I'm working with the sideline talent and I have to, you know, wander around with them and make sure they have their monitor and their lighting and everything. And there are times that I have just sat around a trailer, you know, and order food for lunch. It's, you know, everything and anything can happen when you're a runner, and that willingness to do anything is, it's very important. And it also kind of makes the job a little fun. I love being a runner. I would still, as a producer, I would have no problem going back and being a runner again for a day. Like, it just sounds like fun right now.
Especially right now, just to even get back out on the road.
Oh my gosh. Yes. So with your job, you kind of gave us a little bit of a rundown of what that means, you know, but how do you go about doing what you do? How do you stay organized? How do you keep a production on task? How do you keep everyone happy? Like, what are the skills that you need to do what you do?
Stay organized and have beautiful little checklists. I have checklists for checklists. And sometimes I even write something that I already did just to check it off to make myself feel better. And also a lot of Excel documents with the schedule, with all of the people working in what position, what days. Like, I have spreadsheets that go on for days, and now they're getting more complicated and longer with COVID because we need a lot more information in our documents, because we need to know when people are landing, because that could depend when they get a test. A COVID test. We use in golf, I just did the PGA Championship, and we used a company called MedCorp. So we had two different groups of people. We had the red group, who were going to be in closer quarters with each other, and then we had a blue group. And depending on which group you were, depending on how many tests you needed, what days you got the tests. And so we had to keep really good track of when people were coming in, how many days they sequestered in the hotel, what days they were getting their tests and stuff like that.
Wow. Like, for just a large scale production, let's say the PGA Championship, for example, since it's a recent one for you, what kind of time and preparation goes into that, you know, on the front end? How early are you starting to think about the PGA Championship before it starts?
Well, May 2021 is when the next PGA Championships are, and I'm already planning for that. I'm looking at hotels and all of that stuff right now. It depends. I mean, I worked on SportsCenter for a long time too. I did SportsCenter on the road, and sometimes with SportsCenter on the road, we're following a story, and so we wouldn't know what we were going to do until 4 days out. So then you jam pack everything into 4 days of everything that you need to do. But with the PGA Championship, I mean, we're already working on May 2021. And if the PGA Championship this year actually happened in May instead of August, we would have been starting to plan as soon as we finished the next one. So It just depends on how long something takes, but you pretty much, my job is to always be forward thinking and start planning ahead. So even when I worked on SportsCenter on the road, I had a list of a yearly calendar like that I created of every big sporting event that was going to happen, and it would be January, and I'd be sitting in a room and being like, okay, August or July is the All-Star game. Do you think we're going to go to the All-Star game? Like, I just go through, like, what do you think we're going to hit up this year? Cause I need to start planning any little way that I can.
And no matter how much you plan, even on an event like PGA, you're still going to end up messing with things 4 days out, like you would have on SportsCenter on the road, right?
Mm-hmm.
Totally. Especially like this year was like right before everybody was actually on site, and they're like, oh, we're going to test everybody three times instead of two times. And then you're like totally changing everything that you're doing to accommodate, and like new rules are coming up, like things that I never had to think of before, like the type of chair that our staff is sitting in. It can't be cloth. It needs to be leather because they're easy to wipe down, and, you know, making sure everybody has headsets for the truck so they're not using shared ones. And if they have shared ones, do they have the proper equipment to clean the headsets? Like, it's all things that I never really had to think of before in like making shared off, like we used to have shared office supplies, you know, like you would go in and you'd have this, the section with staplers and hole punchers and pens and pencils and whatever. And now we like put everything in a little baggie and everybody has their individual stuff. And just a lot more planning goes into everything that we do.
You talk about the timetable for events when you start thinking about the logistics of them. And I don't think people understand how much logistics go into a large scale ESPN production. And not only that, you're trying to book those logistics around large sporting events where other people are trying to do things like book hotel, book transportation into the exact same place as you. Can you kind of just go over the scale of a large production, like a PGA championship, like a College World Series, you know, something where you're coming into an already large sporting event with an extremely large crew with a large amount of logistics around it?
Well, so I guess the first thing when I find out that we're going to be somewhere, I mean, College World Series is easy. We're in Omaha every year. We stay at the same hotel every year. And so that one's kind of an easy one. But like PGA Championship, especially like this year. So the PGA Championship is one of those weird events that ESPN has it and so does CBS. So mm-hmm. we're working with CBS. Simultaneously, and some of the crew is shared, some of them are not. And usually in a pre-2020 normal year, we would go off and do our own thing. They would go off and do they wherever they're going to stay. But the first thing I do when I find out we're going to go somewhere, I have a guesstimate of how many people are going and what days they're going. So I kind of make a block of days and how many people are going. And the first thing I do is try to get rooming blocks at different hotels. And then I look at the hotels and see different things like, is there restaurants around them like that people can walk to? Like what, how late does their catering stay open? Because if it closes, I need to be sure my people can eat if they get home late. I look at all of that type of stuff. And then normally would just choose, and also the rate, it would just choose the best option for my crew. How far it is from the location, can people walk? Does everybody have to have rental cars? Who has to have rental cars? Like it all now is so different because everybody has to have a rental car, where before we would block people in to ride with folks, depending on what position they worked on. But now it's like everybody has to have a rental car because you can't ride in a car with somebody. Because our main priority is to keep our crew safe and healthy. And that's one of the ways that we do that. But for PGA Championship this year, because of testing and everything, we wanted to have the same hotel as CBS to make it easier because we were sharing that resource of testing and making sure everybody was healthy and safe. And so we picked the same hotel together. And just thankfully, because nobody else, people couldn't go to the PGA Championship. So you didn't have all the fans that were also trying to book hotel rooms. So that helped this year. Because a lot of time that's a struggle, especially with golf, to find a place.
How big are your crews? How big, how many people are on set for you? You know, like, again, let's just use the PGA Championship since it's a fairly recent one. You know, what kind of, what is the scale, I guess, to some extent?
So I would say pre-COVID, we probably would have had, close to 200 people on site just for ESPN. That doesn't include CBS and the shared folks. Because with that, it'd probably be closer to 800. But with COVID, we had to come up with some unique ways to do our jobs. And so some people were working from home We had 8 broadcasters at home. So we had about 120 maybe folks on site. So we decreased it by like 80, almost half.
Wow.
Yeah.
And then you talked a little bit about collaborating with CBS, but you also, you've got directors, producers, you know, everyone outside of kind of your little role. How do you communicate across departments? How do you communicate with people throughout the company? And, you know, obviously they're looking at production different than you're looking at production. And, you know, how do you, I guess just how do you communicate with them and how do you make sure they understand what you need and you understand what they need?
Well, we have a lot of meetings, and they start way out. So I can get an idea of what directors are looking for or the producers are looking for early on. And they, the more experienced producers and directors know what PCs are looking for. It's when you have a newer person that you sometimes have to re-explain, like, this is why you need to tell me, because if you don't tell me, you're not going to have a hotel room. Or, you know, they learn quickly that we're the person that they need to tell everything to. Copy me on everything. If it's not pertinent, I'll just delete it or file it. And, you know, but it's smart to copy us on everything, because I could be looking at something that they're saying and be like, oh, that means we're going to need an extra person. That means I need to get another hotel room. That means, you know, I have to credential somebody else. This means I have to, you know, there's a whole trickle effect of everything that anybody does that could affect my job. So they're really good at copying me on everything and anything that they need.
For you, are there any favorite events? You know, I know you talked about wanting to get on X Games early on, and you know, having worked X Games for you, I know that eventually you got on X Games, you know, as a PC. And, you know, is that still one of your favorite events? Or obviously you've done a lot of things since then.
I mean, I'll always have a special place for the X Games, because that's where I kind of grew up. I started as the runner, didn't have very much responsibility, and then slowly became who I am today. So I have lots of really good memories of the X Games, and the people were amazing. I think the most challenging event I've ever done was when Muhammad Ali passed away. This was a quick, I was on SportsCenter on the road. We decided we're going to go to Louisville and cover his funeral. Well, it just so happened there was some sort of like weightlifting thing going on in Louisville. So like every hotel was booked up, and then the passing of him and people like flooding to get hotel rooms, just fans. I went to Louisville with not enough hotel rooms for my crew. And first thing I did when I got off the plane is started walking to all the different hotels in Louisville, and one by one, putting them on my P card, trying to get rooms for every single person that was going to be coming in the following days. So that was like, and we didn't have hotel. So most events are happening at a stadium or at a college, and there's a place associated with it where we can get office space. Well, this was a funeral. And there was no like space that was like, there wasn't anybody to work with to be able to get office space. So I ended up like walking the streets trying to find an office building that looked like they had some space, and walking in and being like, hey, you guys have any space where ESPN can hole up for the next 4 days? And so doing that from the ground up in the matter of 4 days was probably one of the most challenging events I ever did, because it also wasn't normally what we cover. In the scope that we did, it was insane, because we had like, I don't even know how many cameras, but I mean, set up all over Louisville and all the different spots that the car was going to drive by. And it was crazy, like trying to figure out, okay, where are we going to set this person up? Where are we setting this person up? How many trucks do we actually need? How many uplink trucks do we need as opposed to trucks? And it was crazy.
I know we talked about it a little bit earlier in getting started in this industry, but if you had any advice to give to our younger listeners who are looking to get in at a place like ESPN, a big network like that, what advice would you give them?
Don't expect everything to happen overnight, one. And two, just be willing to do anything and work hard. I mean, that's the biggest thing is working hard. This job isn't your normal 9-to-5. It doesn't matter what position you are, whether you're a PA, an analyst, a producer, a director, a CP, like you, what all of the positions, it's not your normal 9-to-5. And you could be working, I mean, college football playoffs, I can tell you, I work 48 hours straight without sleep because it's such a big event. And it's not that it's expected, but it's just kind of part of the culture of TV production. Like, you do whatever you have to do to get it done. And everybody's so passionate about the final product that I guess you don't mind doing it.
I heard you kind of say, like, work hard. You know, how much does that actually get noticed on a set? Like, I know as a runner, a lot of times early on, I just felt like no one's paying attention to me. I can sit around and do whatever I want. But, like, I noticed the longer I did it that people were actually paying attention. And, like, whether I got hired by a producer again sometimes depended on how much I was actually doing when I was there.
Yeah, I mean, it does get noticed when you definitely have those standout runners. I was lucky and learned the lesson early that you need to surround yourself with good people and a good support, because runners are, it's a super important job. It may not feel like it. You probably don't get paid like it. Like, you definitely didn't when I was a runner. They get paid better now, but my first running gig, I got paid $50 a day. And mm-hmm. I worked like 14 hours. I was like, this sucks. But it does get noticed. And I know for me personally, I have a very tight support crew runners that work for me. And occasionally when one doesn't work, we hire a new one in. But I definitely always take note of, okay, would I hire that person again? And I have a list.
Yeah. You're a production coordinator, or a production manager. Of course you got a list.
I have a list. But yeah, I have the do not hire list. And it's not something that I share with other people. If somebody came to me and was like, hey, I think Garrett Wright worked for you, would you hire him again? Like, I totally take notes on everybody and be like, oh yeah.
Absolutely not. Don't hire that guy.
Don't hire him. He was terrible. No. So I do take notes on who works for me. And I, especially like when I was on SportsCenter on the road, we try to hire local as much as you can. And you're all over the place. So I had it situated by state and in city and people who were like, so when I would go somewhere else, I'd be like, oh, he's close enough. He can drive. Really liked this person. Because you don't always have the budget to be able to fly somebody in that you want. So it's important to keep those notes on who you would hire again and who you wouldn't. And now the rules have changed. Like, back when you were a runner, you could drive yourself and we would only put you up. And like, that's totally changed now. Like, anybody that's working the event, if you're flying them in, you need to put them up. There's no sharing of runner rooms. You don't pile 30 people in a room anymore. Like, back when I was a runner,
that was half of the fun.
The room, and everybody would stay there. So, but things have changed a lot since then.
And the last thing that I think I have for you before we let you go is just, you know, for me, I know networking is a big thing. Like, I really push it. And, you know, we've talked about willingness to do anything, but, you know, for me, I remember I would just email you every weekend, what college football game is within 500 miles of Lincoln, Nebraska that I can drive to that you need a runner for? And, like, you know,
that wasn't even on college football.
Yeah. No, I would get you to connect me to the next producer just because we had built a relationship working on X Games. But, you know, how important is that for those runners to stay in touch with you, and not even just runners or people you've worked with, but, you know, how much is a producer, you know, a production manager, is persistence key when you're, you know, trying to hire for positions?
I think persistence is very key, because sometimes you can forget. And if an event is coming to your town and you know it's coming to your town or somewhere close that you can get to, I think it's very important to just send a note and remind them that, hey, I'm here, because we have a lot of stuff going on that you can forget a little detail like that of somebody. Oh, and then sometimes, like, I've gotten to a state and been like, oh man, I should have hired so-and-so last event. They were awesome, but they didn't reach out. I didn't reach out to them. So if they're busy, they'll just delete it. It doesn't hurt, you know? And I think it's good to keep your name on the top of somebody's head.
Yeah, that's the thing I really try and impress upon people that I talk to is, you know, as a producer, like, if I don't email you back, like, it's usually not on purpose. It's usually because I've just, you know, I'm busy, I forgot, you know, it slipped in the middle of a crazy time. Like, I never mind getting a second or even 30 minutes, you know, spaced out a decent amount. I don't want them, you know, every 3 hours, but yeah, I think that's one of the tough things that I try and tell young people, because I remember I wasn't very good at that. You know, I didn't want to feel like I was bothering this really important person. And the longer I've been in production, the more I've realized that's not really a thing. It's usually I'm not emailing back because I just forgot. Hit me again. Be persistent.
Yeah, I mean, that happened to us when we were trying to set this up. Like, you had emailed and I got slammed that day and the email fell behind. And then 3 days later, I finally found it. It was like, oh my God, I'm so sorry.
Yeah, no, I've been there.
Yeah, it happens for sure.
You always hear the classic story of, like, you know, oh, I just walked up to a production truck on the game day and they hired me. Does that still happen? Do you still get people who will just walk up to the truck and say hey and try and get on?
Not really, but I have been at, like, events where something happens. We either had to let somebody go because they did something wrong. Like, I remember X Games, we had to fire one of the runners for, I think they drank and came to work drunk or something.
It's a big no-no on most jobs.
Yeah. It was a big no-no. And we ended up having to let somebody go. And one of the other runners, this was in Aspen, Colorado, one of the other runners had brought one of their friends along just for the heck of it. And because everybody stays in condos in Aspen. And so he brought a friend that was just, like, sleeping on the couch, and he was just, like, kind of hanging around our office, like, in his Gucci, like, loafers. And I looked at him and I was like, what are you doing? And he was like, nothing. I was like, good, grab a shovel. We need a path, like, shoveled from our office to the cars. And ever since that moment, and he did it in his Gucci loafers, no lie. And he's been working on the X Games ever since. Like, he still works on the X Games to this day.
That feels like the most Aspen story in the world.
Yeah.
Garrett, have I ever told my, on this podcast, have I told my Versus Network story?
No.
So again, this is just classic TV and always being ready for whatever. So I, in college, I got put in contact with Versus Network before they were bought by NBC. So this was when it was owned by OLN still.
Yeah, Outdoor Life. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And they were doing Nebraska, K-State, and I was a runner. And the day before the game, the producer comes to me and says, hey, do you know anybody who knows how to run Foxbox? Anybody knows how to run Bug? Our guy just got sick, can't come in. And I was like, yeah, I know how to run it. I didn't know how to run it, but I really wanted $600. And I really, really wanted to work in a truck. Like, that was like what I wanted to do. And so I just sat there all day the rest of that day. I was like, yeah, can I take a look at it? Can I get going with it? And I just had to teach myself that box from top to bottom and figure it out. Well, the day of the game, the EIC of the truck comes in. He's like, hey, man, your clock's not going to work. I go, okay, cool. What does that mean? He goes, you're going to have to start and stop the play clock and the game clock at the same time and on your own. And we had a confidence cam. And at the time I didn't know anything. If I knew anything about production, I would have been like, hey, you know, the TD needs to, you know, DVE this, DVE the bug, you know, there's no way that's an insane thing for anybody to do. But I sat there and I started and stopped that clock every single time. And it was so bad. The bug was so wrong so many times. It was just me screaming at the producer and director were very, very nice about it. But they knew I was struggling just so many times. I'm just yelling up, being like, bug's wrong. Take the bug out. Bug's wrong. But I think it's a good, you know, you think runner like, oh, I'm just going to go be a runner. But like that stuff happens a lot where they need somebody. Or not only that, the more common thing is you can usually have some time to learn from somebody, you know, on a production and say, hey, can I have, if you really want to be an A1, usually the A1's a nice person, some of them, most of them, you know, and you can be like, hey, can I have 5 minutes of your time? How does this work? And more times than not, people are willing to open up and let you know about what they're doing. And it's a great way to learn and kind of figure out what else you want to do in the live industry.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I had the same experience at College World Series working for Becca actually when, I was a runner in the features unit, and you know, for whatever reason, they had enough people that day, and you know, I got sent off with one of the cameramen, K-Line Shounce, to just carry his batteries, carry water, whatever he needed. But he had just brought his son with him, who was like 14 at the time, and so he was carrying everything. And once K-Line found out, this is when I was at University of Minnesota, and once he found out I knew how to shoot and everything like that, he had a second camera. He just built it for me, and it was a camera that we were thinking about buying at Minnesota. He's like, here, just test drive this. And like, I learned from K-Line shoots for us on Journey now, and like, he is a fantastic shooter, and I learned from him like how to use some of the equipment that he used. And he actually vouched for me when I applied for this job at Big Ten Network working on the Journey now, because he's one of the cameramen. He like put in a good word from that time that I worked at College World Series. So like, yeah, I think that's a great point, is just even when you're just doing, you know, a runner job or like, you know, any entry level job, like learn from those above you. You have so many opportunities, and like this industry is so cool that you know, you're around really talented people all the time when you're on site, and like never hesitate to network and see what you can learn outside of what your assigned role is on a, you know, get your work done. You know, I'm not telling runners to just bail on what they need to mm-hmm. do, but you know, when possible, like you have a real opportunity to learn as an entry-level person. And I think that, you know, everything that Beck has said today, you know, and some of the stories that Brock and I have been a part of or even heard, you know, kind of echo that you can really take an entry-level job or a, you know, what you think is a low-level job and turn it into something special if you have the willingness and the drive to do it yourself.
I think especially right now with COVID and how everything has changed and is changing is probably going to set new standards for us moving forward, even if we can go back to the quote-unquote normal. I think this time has been a challenge for companies like ESPN, where we have folks on furlough and determining whether we're going to take them off. Can somebody else do that job? Do we really need that position? And other folks really stepping up and doing more than their quote unquote normal job. I mean, because they're cutting things in every corner, trying to keep people safe, save money, all of that stuff. And I think the more things that you can do, the more versatile you are, the better chance you have to survive.
We'd love to hear your thoughts, feedback, and suggestions. So pop on over to the Sports Creative Community on Slack and connect with us and your fellow creatives there. The quickest way to get us to stop this podcast is to not tell anyone about it. So leave us your 5-star rating and don't forget to subscribe so you're the first person to catch each new episode. And remember, the world needs your voice, so keep creating.